This is World Cafe. I'm Rena Duris. How do you introduce Barbara Streisand? She's one of those people where the phrase, my next guest needs no introduction, actually applies. Barbara Streisand is a superstar in every respect. In every field she's ever entered into, she has dominated it, winning award after award, selling out show after show, setting chart and album sales records. And the entire time, she's had complete creative control over her vision. Recently, Barbara dipped into her extensive archives and compiled a new album of previously unreleased and, in some cases, reworked songs from throughout her career. The album is called Release Me Too. And today, Barbara joins me to talk about that album and a whole lot more in a wide-ranging, very funny, and possibly surprising conversation. A few of the songs on Release Me Too are duets, and we're going to start with just a bit of Barbara singing with Willie Nelson on the song I'd Want It To Be You.
Sometimes, if you're lucky, you find that certain someone you can always count on to be true.
To be true.
If I had a choice of only one friend in this world, you know that I'd want it to be you.
I'm so excited to welcome to the show Barbara Streisand. Welcome to the World Cafe.
Thank you. Thank you. Did you say my name right? What did you say?
Barbara Streisand.
Ooh, you did it right.
I did it. I did my homework, Barbara.
Oh, my God. That sounds so cute. Did you listen to Siri? I had to correct Siri because she was using the Z instead of the S.
And you went right to the top to get that fixed.
I did.
Called up Tim Cook and made it happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, first of all, thank you for this new album. It's a collection of previously unreleased songs from throughout your career. It's called Release Me Too. It's a follow-up to 2012's Release Me. You went back to the vault, and some people might think I'm speaking metaphorically when I say vault, but I understand that it is kind of true. Could you describe the space where you keep all of your work?
Oh, yeah. Actually, I was saving the beautiful picture of the vault and me standing in it for the next Release Me album called Release Me 3.
So that space that we're going to see on Release Me 3, that vault area, could you give us an idea of what it's like? Like, where do you keep all of these, the tapes and the recordings?
Yeah, they're just rows of shelves that have my movies, that have my recordings, I think there's a special space for articles and, you know, written things that we're keeping track of because I think the Library of Congress wants it. I'm not sure. There's some things go to the Smithsonian, but I just don't have room for all of that stuff. So we have to house it in a, you know, room-controlled archival place. That's a vault. Yeah.
Almost like a museum of all of your career. And that title, Release Me, I feel like it's almost like these songs are begging to get out into the world. So when you have such a large body of work.
I just caught it your Canadian accent.
Oh, did you? When did you? And did you hear me when I said get out?
Yeah. And you know what? I've just been vacationing, a few weeks ago, with my friends from Toronto.
Oh, that's where I'm from.
Yeah. That's what I just heard about you. And we have a constant fight with my friend Jerry, who says, how do you say CH? You know, the wine that we have, the cheap wine on a table in an Italian restaurant.
Oh, Chianti?
C-H-I. Yeah. You say it like him. Oh,
well,
God.
How do you say it?
Chianti.
Oh.
Chianti.
Chianti. I've never heard that one. That's so funny.
What were the other words? And he said, how do you pronounce P-A-S-T-A?
Pasta.
That's right. We down here, the lower level, say pasta, but he says pasta.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was pasta. You know how funny that is. That's like the word past. Yeah, that's true, but it's pasta, right?
It's a very subtle, but it's a very subtle accent that becomes very obvious as soon as you know what the tiny little things are.
Yeah, yeah. It's very funny, though. It's very funny. Anyway, I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Not at all.
What were you asking me?
I was just going to ask, you know, when you have such a large body of work, how do you decide what songs to go back to for an album like this?
Well, I have my A&R man, Jay Landris, has been with me over 25 years. And so we've talked through a lot of these songs over the years. He can really guess what I would like. And he found the songs that I didn't even remember singing, the song with Kermit the Frog. And when we played it, it was like, oh, yes, I did that for my son, Jason, who was a big fan of the Muppet movie and Sesame Street. As a matter of fact, his auntie Sis, who was my best friend for many, many years, she recently died. She was the casting director for Sesame Street. So that's why that song is on the album.
Yeah, because you recorded that version originally for your 1979 album, Wet, and it didn't make the cut, the Rainbow right. Connection. But in the version on this album, it isn't Jim Henson who's singing with you. It's Matt Vogel, who's been voicing Kermit since 2017,
No, that's not true.
Oh, really?
This is Jim Henson.
Oh, it is Jim Henson.
Yeah, we had to fight to get that. I think Jay, you know, was dealing with Disney for quite a while, but it had to be Jim Henson, you know? And everybody seems to really like it.
I mean, it's so heartwarming. What's not to like about you and Kermit singing together?
Because when Jay was suggesting it, he told me the story that he said, you've sung duets with, you know, Judy Garland and all these amazing people, but you never sang with Kermit the Frog.
Well, let's take a listen to it right now.
Okay.
It's Barbara Streisand and Kermit the Frog, The Rainbow Connection.
Why are there so many songs about rainbows? And what's on the other side?
Rainbows are visions, but only illusions. And rainbows have nothing to hide.
The Rainbow Connection, Barbara Streisand and Kermit the Frog. Barbara is my guest today. Your new album is called Release Me Too. And on this album, you perform songs written by people like Burt Bacharach, Barry Gibb, Randy Newman, Carole King. When you are choosing a song to perform, what does that song need to have? What are you looking for?
First of all, I look for the melody. Then I look for the lyric. So, you know, is it a song I can act as for the actress in me, which was all the songs I first recorded when I started my recording career, when I was 18 and started to sing because I couldn't get a job as an actress. It was all about what character can I play? You know, the songs were from Broadway and they all were like little three-act plays. With a beginning, a middle, and an end. And so I could use my acting talent, whatever talent that was. In terms of the melody, it's what my voice would sound like singing a certain song. I always looked for those high notes or something I could, I don't know, it just, you know, I thought I was going to sing just for a little bit of time until I got a job as an actress, you know? And then it became my career. At first, before acting.
I mean, I feel like you've had several sort of concurrent careers.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Well, maybe could we take the song You Light Up My Life, written by Carole King. She put out her version in 1973. You recorded your interpretation of the song, the one that we're about to hear, the year after. So maybe you could use this as an example. How did you find your own way into the lyrics of this song? How did you act this song?
How did I? You know, that's not a perfect example of one that I could act. I actually liked, I hardly sang happy songs.
Right.
You know, the songs of My Man's Gone Now and I Had Myself a True Love, you know. But it was sad songs, Cry Me a River. It was like that. I thought, well, let me try to pretend I'm happy. That
right.
Kind of sense. How would I sing it as a person who's happy?
I guess it is. It's a tougher thing sometimes to act happy than to act sad.
Oh, yeah, it was for me, certainly. Yeah, I mean, Happy Days Are Here Again was certainly not a happy person singing it. It was like, I was doing it in the 60s, and it was ironic, you know, or it was before the Vietnam War or during it. Oh, no, it wasn't. It wasn't. I'm sorry,
that's
Arena.
Okay.
It was during the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Right.
And I thought the world could end, you know, with this nuclear war with Russia. And that was my basis for my reading of it. Now, at the end, you know, Peter Matz went a little nutty. In those days, we only had 3-hour sessions to do 4 songs. I had a tight budget and that I couldn't do it over or change the orchestration. I only did it recently on the Walls album where I revisited Happy Days Are Here Again with a more lushly classical take on it. And it was about Trump.
Right.
It was about my disillusionment with what the country had chosen for a leader.
I want to play Happy Days Are Here Again so people can hear it.
Which one?
Which one should we play? Why don't you choose for us?
Well, no, you choose.
Well, let's do the one from Walls.
Yeah. Okay, good.
All right. So this is Barbara Streisand with Happy Days Are Here Again on World Cafe. Oh.
Yeah. I'll tell you the other way to go. And that is any of my latest appearances, you know, on record. Ask Jay Landers, what's the best one on a record of a real performance where you can hear me sing it the way I want to sound? Oh, I know. Even the 1994 concert, that version, The Concert, it was called.
Okay, here it is. Happy Days Are Here Again from The Concert. Happy Days Are Here Again, Barbara Streisand, my guest today on World Cafe. A while ago, I watched the Netflix special of your most recent tour, The Music, The Memories, The Magic. There was this moment that struck me in that concert film where you're backstage and you're doing your own makeup and you say you've always done your own makeup. And mm-hmm. I'll be honest, I that surprised me. Have people tried to get you to let somebody else do it for you?
Yes, it's like the first time I went to Hollywood to do Funny Girl. Forgive my chewing, but I got very hungry.
That's okay. Go ahead.
I'm swallowing now. It's going to be fine. But they wanted to make me up. So I said, you know, I'd like to do it 2 ways. One, you make me up, do anything you want to my face. 2, I want to use the way I make. I want to do my own makeup. And let's look at it on film. And, you know, we'll decide. And I think they also believed my makeup was best for me.
Right.
People did, you know, they made me look like a different person. I don't know. It was like, I've always done my own makeup.
One thing in that concert film as well, there's this bit where it's intermission and you call a restaurant yourself while you're taking a break in the middle of your own show to order a whole bunch of crabs for after the concert. And I think that's the kind of thing some people would assume you'd have someone else do for you, but you just go and do it, which I just thought was the best.
I thought it's funny. I thought funny, first of all, and I want to make sure I get everything I want for after the show and where my team comes up and we all enjoy, you know, a meal, and I can then diet the next day to get ready for the next show. But I have to have something great waiting for me at the end of a show. It takes a lot out of me. It's like, oh my God, can I get through 22 songs, you know?
Yeah, I would imagine.
But if I know there's something waiting, that has to be ordered and delivered hot so that I can eat it hot. I don't want to reheat it. You see what I mean? And so, you know, it's like very important to me. I have some, that is so funny. Now, where did I do that when I was young? Oh yeah. I was once in a play, an acting school, and I was supposed to be in love with the character. It was a play called A Phoenix Too Frequent by Christopher Fry, a kind of classical piece. And I was supposedly the maid in love with the leading man, but I really didn't like him. So I said, okay, do me a favor. On a stool in the wings, put a piece of chocolate cake. And then I will look past him a bit and look at the cake. And that will make me look like I love him. It's true.
That's such a great trick.
I write about it in the book I'm writing. Those are my tricks, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I have read before that you do get, or at least you used to get nervous going on stage. Do you still get nervous?
Oh, more so than ever. Yeah,
really?
I never used to get nervous at the beginning because it's like I had something to prove, you know? I'm going to be something someday. I'm going to be somebody, you know? I wanted my name remembered, my life remembered, because my father died so young. At 35, he died. And I always thought, I have to live longer than that. I can't disappear too early like that. So I wasn't scared at the beginning. But as you get older, I think it's like, well, will I disappoint the public now? You know, is my voice as good? It's all that, you know, I'm gaining too much weight and I really don't want to have all those fittings. Like everybody seems to, if you watch Saturday Night Live, the host changes costumes like 15 times. I never liked fittings, you know, because I'm kind of lazy that way. I only cared about what I was going to sing and what I was going to say. And I like to be free to ad lib to my audience always, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I know that on stage, sometimes you will talk about, you know, more than the music that you're performing. You'll talk about issues that concern you. I mean, you've always used your voice, not just as a singer and an artist, but as an activist.
Yes, yes, yes. Because, you know, real life to me is the most important thing. I mean, you know, I used art in a sense, you know, acting and singing and writing as a way to express my feelings about a greater circle of life, which is the world, mm-hmm. which is pandemics, which is heart disease. And the truth about women and heart disease hasn't come out. I mean, it's taken years to tell the truth about things, you know? And I'm a strong believer in the power of the truth. It would have been so powerful if Trump would have just told the truth about the disease. You know? Why lie?
Well, you wrote a song in 2018 called Don't Lie to Me
that was, I sure did,
directed at him. Am I right?
Yes, that's true. But, you know, it's interesting that a lot of people didn't buy it. It's not like another, even though most of the songs were not political, maybe two songs were political, I don't know what that's about, but it didn't stop me, doing it.
I'm talking to Barbra Streisand on World Cafe. I'm Rena Duris. Here's a bit of Don't Lie to Me.
How do you win if we all lose? You change the facts to justify. Your lips move, but your words get in the way, in the way, in the way. Kings and queens, crooks and thieves, you don't see the forest for the trees. Head and heart on our knees, you can't see what we all see. How do you sleep?
Was a little bit of Barbra Streisand's song 2018 called Don't Lie to Me. I think some artists now they get nervous about getting political because there can be this backlash. Social media didn't anybody can get angry at anyone and they'll see it,
I know. I just don't care about things that are unimportant.
Right.
what I mean? It's like I have to put my energies into things that I deeply care about, like climate change. That's why I did that song from that concert. What was it? Imagination? Pure Imagination.
Yeah, from Willy Wonka.
Yeah, and the film behind it, about what, you don't want to lose the beautiful, what nature is giving you. I mean, losing the fish, losing the animals, losing everything because of global warming, climate change, fires and hurricanes. And why? I gave my first big grant to the Environmental Defense Fund in 1989 because I was concerned about climate change.
Yeah.
And it's like, look how many years later that is, that we're still fighting this. It's a truth. It's a fact. And I think people can face it when they are told the truth.
I think that hope that you have comes through in a lot of the work that you do.
Yeah, I mean, you have to have hope because without it, what's the point of living? You have to believe that the day will come when people will know that vaccinations are to protect them and their families and reduce the deaths. It's a kind of common sense thing, it's like denying reality. Trump lived in a bubble of his own fantasies, and the Republicans today are just still following his lead in some crazy way. He lost the election, that's the fact. By 7 million votes, not by 537 that Al Gore lost by, or 77,000 that Hillary Clinton lost by 7 million votes, he lost the election. And now we're seeing all the corruption behind trying to change the vote, and look what's happening now with trying to squelch voting rights. How is this possible? It was passed in 1965, voting rights. Every person is entitled to a vote. So, it's very disheartening to me. I know. I'm always told, don't bring up your politics. Don't do that. But people have to know. I don't care, in a sense, if I lose sales. That doesn't matter to me. I want the earth to survive. I want people to survive. I believe in life and enjoying it to its fullest and with the healthiest of people around the planet,
I respect that a lot. I respect that not, saying, I don't care if I lose sales because that's not the important thing in life.
That's right.
Yeah. I do. I know we only have a couple minutes, so I just want to get to one more song from you. And I think it ties into the idea of hope. The last song we're going to listen to from Release Me Too is the song One Day a Prayer.
Oh, One Day a Prayer. Okay.
Could you tell us what this song means to you?
I love the song Be Aware, too, because it was written, in 1971.
Well, let's do Be Aware, then. Let's do that.
Okay, because it's so relevant today.
So it was Burt Bacharach and Hal David and Be Aware.
He was going to write a song for me for his television show. And my thinking was about the war at the time and people going hungry and children were becoming homeless and the adults and children were becoming homeless. And people have to be aware today of people who are less fortunate than themselves. I certainly am. I feel very grateful for all I have. But my philosophy, and maybe it came from my being brought up in a Jewish household, I don't know, where we were poor, you know? I slept in the bed with my mother, and in the same room, my brother had a folding cot. But we always had a little box. And the Jewish tradition, it's a charity box, and you put your leftover change or dollars into it for people who are less fortunate than you. So I think that was ingrained in me, to give back. It just makes me feel good. It makes me feel good as well to give and see, you know, how it affects people in their lives and reading their letters. But that's the way it is. That's what makes me happy.
Well, Barbara Streisand, thank you so much. You've made me very happy today. We're so grateful.
Oh, you're so sweet. Really.
We're so grateful to have you.
Well, you're so kind, really. Nice to be with you.
Barbara Streisand, this is Be Aware.
When the sun is warm where you are, and it's comfortable and safe where you are, well, it's not exactly that way all over, and somewhere in the world someone is called Be Aware.
That was Be Aware, from Barbara Streisand's new album, Release Me Too. That album is out now, and Barbara Streisand has been my guest today. Thank you again to Barbara, and thank you to World Cafe senior producer Kimberly Junod for all of her work on this session, and thank you for listening. I'm Raina Duris. This is World Cafe.